Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks so much for listening to this interview for The Orphans. You can head on over to patreon.com/orphansaudio to support the show and get way more Orphans content. You can also follow us on social media at Orphans Audio, and you can head to our website, orphanspod.com, for transcripts, merch, and a link to our Discord. See you there. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to another interview for The Orphans. Now I'm interviewing Alex Bird, who plays Baz on The Orphans.
Yeah,
very exciting.
It is.
Yeah. How did you get involved with the show?
How did I get involved with the show? I think I was persuaded to get involved with the show.
Yeah.
It took me a while, didn't it? I was not for any reason. It was a brilliant... opportunity, and I wanted to be involved, but thankfully workload wasn't so busy, and I was able to get involved in The Orphans with Amy, who's a good friend. You're laughing. I don't mean in that way.
No. Question. It's just funny because I remember when we were trying to cast Baz, when we were trying to get you, and
that's very flattering, isn't it?
We were trying to get you.
That's how good.
And it would be like every couple of days we'd exchange a message, and it would be like a couple days to when we were recording, and I would like message Amy and be like, "Just talk to him, talk to him, please."
I remember Amy messaging me, going, "Are you gonna do it?" And I went, "Oh God, I feel I have to now," which wasn't the case. I was very happy to be a part of the show. No. A workload wasn't too bad, and I was able to do it. I do remember that day very fondly, actually, the very first day.
The very first one.
Yeah.
Everyone said that. I remember that day very nervously. Yeah, well, because I didn't know what I was doing.
I was worried
that I would gather all these people here today and I would just fall Happy flat adventures. On my face. Yeah. And everyone would leave going like, "Oh, fuck, what have I signed up for?"
No, I thought you were very professional. I remember talking to you about Baz at the very beginning and you having a very clear view on it, and that was very helpful. So that was
I remember that talk.
Yeah, there you go.
Why don't you tell the audience a bit about Baz and how you've interpreted him?
Firstly, because again, going back to conversation, a little segue there was quite good, wasn't it? I remember firstly thinking of him as quite vulnerable anyway, and quite weak. But I mean, you were kind of going on this kind of basis of him being quite strong, but in a caring, kind of considerate way.
Yeah.
And I think that's been the kind of springboard of him. He's quite caring, quite considerate, and he's kind of the heart in the group, I guess.
Yeah, 100%.
I think he's always there looking out for people. He's always people first. I mean, there's that scene when obviously he's saying when he becomes... Oh, can I give spoilers?
Oh,
Do I not? Oh, I was so close.
I know, it was like right there.
It was right there. So if someone was listening, I'd be intently going. Oh, when he becomes what? I'll leave it there. Oh, that's exciting. So when he becomes...
No, don't say it. Don't say it. Just because I'll leave it, yeah.
When it happens.
If you know, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So then that's when the fans
know. Yeah, the fans exactly.
But when that happens, he's very considerate of others, and he's just always looking out for everyone else. And I think that was the main thing, just making sure he the audience felt for him and was on his side, and there was never a moment you thought of him as arrogant, because I think that would have destroyed the piece. He needs to be caring.
Yeah, and then it could have so easily turned into that, but you had a lovely balanced performance in him. No, you did, and you make my job a lot easier. One thing I'm asking everyone is, can you describe what it's like when the whole group comes together for a recording session? That's what every single person who I've asked so far has reacted with.
Oh, it's very professional. it's weird how the dynamic is so strong. There's a rare moment where we're not making jokes, or there's not some kind of joke on set.
On set, you mean my bedroom?
In your bedroom. Which I see is set. I see it's a set. It's very professional.
Well, it's set up nicely.
Exactly. Right? It's set up very professionally. And I think it's good fun. We get the job done. Mm. But we have fun doing it, which is, I guess,
you have a lot of fun.
Which is quite cliche, isn't it? Like, we get the job done, but we have fun doing it.
No, but it's always Amy who's like, I'm ready, and you guys are just off having a joke, and it feels and if James is there, he'll
James
drag you into
awful.
It
Declan can be bad as well. I mean, again, lovely guy, but sometimes when sometimes he'll just say something like, oh, where'd that come from. It's funny guy. I think Amy, bless her, have you interviewed her?
Not yet.
She's probably going to be the person who has the most to say about this. But I think me and James are bad culprits. I think we've had times where I've had time on my show, haven't I, in some of these? Like, is that going in the bloopers?
It might go in the bloopers,
Bitching with Birdie.
Or the acting thing.
There was so much we did. That whole thing with Lucy when we just talked. Just talked for ages.
Lucy? Who's Lucy?
Oh my god. Laura. Who's Lucy?
What do you mean, Laura?
I meant Laura. I'm so sorry, Laura. Can that be not going?
It's fine. You said I'll say you he knows your name, Laura.
He knows exactly. He knows your name, Lucy. Laura. That would be awful. But yeah, no, loads of fun. I've fun with everyone, and I think it's been a really good dynamic. You've got a good group of people together. You've done
well
with that.
It was purely by accident, I have to say.
Yeah.
I knew I had a good group, but it was fragmented because I started out with... It's turning into my interview.
No, please.
I started out with a group of... I think it was two people. It was Ruby was... three people. Ruby was on board, James was on board, Laura was on board. I knew those three from the get-go. And I kind of knew I wanted Amy... And I was like, oh, who could play Richard? And it was Gavin. And then this group kind of slowly came together. And it's funny, I found this. Do you find that the dynamics of everyone in the group is very similar to how their dynamics are in the show?
Yeah, thinking about it. I mean, now you say with Amy, because again, am I allowed to say Nora's the leader?
Nora's the leader.
Nora being leader, I guess that sometimes when she's very stern, especially with me, I'm sure she'll appreciate me saying that. I don't mean that in any bad way, Amy. But I think like me and James tend to make jokes together, and with Gavin as well, you know, when he comes in, he's very much, you know, in a little bit like his character. It's been cast well like that. And I guess it's what I found at the beginning, though, is because obviously I knew Amy and Gavin from my course, and we were quite close as actors. And then we had Laura, Ruby, and James, or and Declan as well. And it was kind of this divide, and it slowly just came together.
Yeah.
And because I felt the divide at the beginning, it was always a bit like, oh, we've actually gone.
In our first session, we had the actors on one side and the non-actors on the other.
Trained actors here.
Yeah.
And exactly.
But then, didn't that speak to the dynamic in those scenes, though? Because you didn't know each other. Mm. Exactly, and that
you
was...
You planned it very well.
Thank you.
You planned it very well.
Oh, thank you. Planned, of course.
Oh, exactly. No, but very well done.
I'm going to read some of the questions up. Please. I have here. Okay, this one has been interesting because I've got a very different reaction from different people.
Okay.
What do you think is the most important relationship Baz has in that group of people?
Ooh.
And why?
Most important relationship Baz has. I was going to say something else, and I'm going to go... with Nora, and I don't know, I don't think I can say that because it's spoilers, but because of her influence, so I'm going to be very careful.
You have 2 minutes to discuss spoilers, and you guys have to skip ahead, okay?
Okay. So within the scene, obviously, Baz and Nora, Nora's very influenced. So in fact, Baz is very influenced by Nora. slip of the tongue. Baz very influenced by Nora in the sense when he becomes the leader of the group. Yeah. Let's skip ahead, guys. Sorry. And I think that's such a changing point for him. Because he's such the lower status member of the group. To be kind of forced into higher status. Yeah. He completely doesn't want it. Yeah. And he completely falls. I think that because of that relationship and that kind of pressure he has and that boots he feels he has to fill.
Yeah.
I think that's the most important relationship because even though it's not is as much as like Joffrey.
We said that you would people would say that in these interviews.
It's Game of Thrones, isn't it? It's yeah, Game of Thrones. So it's doing it. Oh, Joffrey. Even though he's probably got the most dialogue with Joffrey and he obviously they're very supportive of Baz, I do think Nora's relationship and Nora's impact on Baz is the most important for that reason. Because he completely changes his whole life in this and changes his whole position in the group.
Yeah.
I mean, what he was built for. Spoiler. There we go. That's spoiler. I'm not badly spoiler.
No, but that's very much the themes of the show, which it speaks so clearly to identity and when we have these specific roles set out for us. I mean, that's what I've been trying to talk about, and the fact that that's coming through is perfect because it's true in Joffrey. He is programming, but he learns to go outside of it, and that's the same with each of you, is that you learn to exist outside of these predetermined roles that you have for yourselves.
Yeah, exactly, and you know, that does resonate with a lot of people, doesn't it?
I would hope so.
I think so. I think it's very well thought out in that sense. There you go.
Well, thank you.
Alex Brownlow's here.
You've done a lot of work on stage and in theater, stage and in film.
Yeah.
What was it like transitioning to audio?
I have done something in audio before. I've done one radio thing. It wasn't really a drama. I did this for a thing I did with BU, and we did this radio comedy kind of one episode thing. They had a few going on, and I was in one of the episodes as a magician. And
you have a thing with magicians.
I do. Magicians are. I'm often cast as magicians. I think I've got that look.
Maybe.
No, not quite
trustworthy.
No, yeah, always stealing things.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm saying that. Magicians don't steal things. Back onto the question, Alex, so I can get distracted. But I think it's a very different. I mean, it's got that kind of same feel as film, as you've got to do different takes, and you've kind of got to keep your stamina up in that sense. You can't give it all on the first take, and you have to do a few more. It's weird with the microphones in front of you, not being able to react to someone directly in front of you, and you sometimes forget and go, your mouth goes off the microphone, and it's got a definite different feel, but I don't think it loses that, that emotion, that kind of realness. I think you still have all of that in these radio dramas. I don't think you lose that. I think, you know, there's some great stuff the BBC do, and they're still as moving as stuff you see on stage, on TV, on film. And I think that's the kind of thing with all these different art forms. They still do resonate, and they still have those emotions, and they still connect to people.
Did you find that you had to change the way you spoke to be on the... on the mic?
Yeah. You're thinking of something.
No, I didn't mean to.
No. We won't mention that. But there were some things I had to change. Some things.
Yeah.
Obviously, articulation as well. We laugh now. We have a laugh. But there were a few things. I think it was imagining the world of the orphans was the main thing in those sessions. Because obviously, you're in a... often either in your bedroom or in that
the choky
thing. Awful name for it.
That's what Amy called it on her very first recording session.
Really?
She set that up for herself.
She called it a choky.
That's
nice. That's a lovely place to be in.
Choky.
But the choky then was you know, it's obviously you're in this metal room with all these
the dead room, the voiceover.
You have to imagine this world. You've got to imagine you're up a tree with looking at these creatures, and it's again, sorry, spoilers for everyone watching. I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine, because that's second episode.
That's cool.
You don't even remember what order things go in now.
I do. I think in that sense, it's what was I going on about? Why did I go to that? I don't know what we're talking. What did you ask me?
I asked you if you had to change anything, but actually, this transition is nice to turn into another question. Do you ever, picture or hear the sounds, what it's going to sound like
there you go.
When it when you're recording to get you
coming.
Into it. Yeah, you knew, you preempted me.
I was so intuitive to this.
Because when you first got the script, obviously, you had no idea what it was going to sound like. Have you heard any of the episodes?
We've heard the beginning when we all wake up, so I can reveal that, can't I?
That's the very first scene.
Do you know what? I'm just worried that someone goes, oh, do you know what? I won't listen to the episodes. I'll just listen to this. And I've spoilt it all.
And just the whole show's gone.
It's all gone. So I've heard bits. But I guess imagining the world is... I think there was some sessions where I remember vividly having to think about it, and when there was with some scenarios in the orphans. And I think often you kind of have to. I think you kind of put yourself in the world, because, I mean, when you're in like your bedroom or in these places, you can't really... There's not much there for you to be able to get you into this world of this play. I mean, it's like with stage or film, less so, because it's more realistic in film. But it's like in stage as well. You know, you've got to imagine this world, and you've got to imagine these things are there, and have a picture of it. And it'd be interesting to see what everyone else thought. Because, I mean, what's in my head? It won't be in everyone else's
Maybe not. And what? It's interesting because you guys shape the characters so much. What I put on the page isn't necessarily what comes out, and that's, I think, usually for the better of the show.
Yeah, I mean, because there's loads of scenes you rewrote, didn't you, as well, there and then? Because we
rewrite as we go, and you know, we've all been a process of rewriting scenes and saying, what works here.
What works here,
it was a fun process.
It was good fun. It was a very real process.
It was more process than anything else, I would say, that... You know, with films I'm on, you know, you have to, it's just getting what you can and rushing through it. But with this, we really took a time and process.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic.
I wanted to ask you quickly, what was your first reaction when you read the script? Because you
Which one? All of it?
When you first kind of started to get into the world, did you think, oh, fuck, what have I signed up for? What is this, audio, sci-fi, dogs?
Oh, no, I'm a massive fan of sci-fi. You know me, Doctor Who, Star Wars, I'm a massive fan. So I think the sheer mention of sci-fi made me leap to want to do this more. And I think reading on, because Baz obviously gets more involved as the episodes go on. He's a bit of a smaller character at the beginning. And I think it's getting an idea for him. And I mean, the way we recorded, obviously, we didn't go chronologically.
No,
with it.
we jumped all over the place.
It was just, I think it's with the process with getting a feel for it. It was just. It's so weird to think back. I can't actually think back to how I felt firstly thought.
Mm.
I remember enjoying. I was excited. I remember that first read through, and we did it, and we all introduced the characters, and we were doing it. It was just nice to kind of go, right, this is a great starting block, and these characters are going to build as we go through. And as you say, when we do recordings, when we start doing recordings to the end, they're just second nature. There was no kind of thinking about getting back into it. You just kind of sat and did the line, and it just came out as
this
character.
It's comfortable. You're all comfortable in the characters.
Oh, yeah, and
now.
I think they're all in our kind of range of playing ranges, because it's no one's kind of going, oh, how would that person say this? It's like, I mean, that kind of... vulnerable kind of character is something I'm quite familiar to. So I think Baz was exciting to play in such a way, and the way he progresses with the story is quite exciting, because he's a...
In my interview, I said he was my favourite one to write, his whole arc.
Because of me.
Because of you. You and exclusively you.
Even before you thought of me, you thought,
exactly.
I hope Alex does this.
Alex, yeah.
Oh, I hope it's an arrogant.
Well, speaking of how it is to play him, what was... I asked this, we'll wrap this up after this question.
No.
What was the most fun scene to record, and what was the most challenging scene to record?
Again, I can't really, it's hard to say this without giving spoilers away.
What are you thinking of spoiling?
I'm thinking of the big one. I'm thinking of when Nora, and then he gets... that's probably the most...
No,
you know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about.
It's hard, this.
I'll say that there's spoilers for that episode at the beginning of...
Okay.
There are spoilers for episode 4 in this interview, so please listen to that before you listen to this interview.
There you go, fantastic. Well, so with that scene, when Baz is sort of, not say forced, but almost has this kind of big... If you become the leader, kind of pushed upon him, I think kind of getting that transition into him being a bit more forceful, a bit more, this is how things are going to be. It felt a weird transition to do. It was kind of a little bit turned on his head a little bit.
Yeah.
So that was probably the most challenging one. I mean, there's also, I mean, the last scene's always, I mean, the last one's going to be.
We haven't even done that yet. I'm scared to do that because I recorded the second half of that first, that last episode where other things happen to other characters.
Ooh, right.
And I got I started getting really emotional because they were performing this scene and I was like, fuck, don't do this.
I remember, I think I was sat there getting a bit emotional. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm not looking forward to recording that scene.
No, it's going to be sad. So I think that one will be as well.
Yeah.
I won't say much about that one. And what was your
the most fun? What was the most fun?
Most fun one to do. Probably. I hope Amy says this as well. I'll be very insulted. And the scene where we firstly read it as something else completely.
I was going to bring that up.
Are you? Can I say it?
Yeah, go for it.
We read this scene, and we were convinced that Zach has wrote a sex scene for myself and Amy. And I think because of that. Doing the scene that has got the giggles and it was so funny.
Yeah. You guys were convinced that your characters were in love.
You
came to me with that and I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Literally go, what have you done? What have you done to this? I'm sure brilliant is advising you for almost. I was so funny. Oh, it was so, so
it
funny.
It was
and
very
I think
funny.
Because of that, it just stayed in my head every time we did it, even when we did it seriously. Because we are serious actors.
Of course, you're very Amy's, professional.
We were very professional. I don't want anyone to think otherwise, but that was probably the most fun. That was the most fun.
Oh, well, thank you for talking to me today, Alex.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank you.
And yeah, you can listen to The Orphans. I'm sure there are links all around us. And check out Alex's stuff.
So my page. And,
yeah, thank you so much. We'll talk to you. Bye.
Yeah, bye. Bad saying bye. Baz out.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hello.
Hello,
this is one. This is yet another interview for The Orphans, and this time I'm interviewing Gavin Richards, who plays Richard.
Yes.
Yes. And you're nervous about this interview?
I am.
Why?
I don't do interviews.
You're above it all.
No, yeah. No, it's just I don't like interviews.
Why is that?
I feel judged.
You're not judged at all. I think... Oh.
Oh. Oh. Bant.
So you play Richard on the show.
I do.
And can you tell me a bit about Richard as a character and kind of what he goes through in the show?
I don't know if I can. It's a secret.
Can you not spoil episode 7?
Not spoil what happens in episode 7?
It's the one where...
Okay, no, I know. I'm teasing. A bit about Richard. Well, Richard. Well, he is that character, isn't he?
He is Richard, isn't he?
You all understand it when I say he is that character. No, he's a character that strives for power, mm-hmm. Thinks he knows best, when actually he doesn't a mm-hmm. lot of the time. Although I would say he does grow into that. He does... learn, and he grows up through the time that he has with the other people, and eventually he sees what's right. Mm. He's a character through the strive for power, makes wrong decisions, mm-hmm. isn't very good at making friends, mm-hmm. is quite socially unacceptable sometimes, I suppose.
Yeah.
He's a very hard, confused character, I think. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know exactly... He wants recognition, I suppose, but I don't think he understands for what, and he feels by helping everybody else to survive that would be enough for him. Mm-hmm. But he needs to learn a lot more before achieving his goals.
Yeah, that's a very, very good answer. you touched on the idea of growing up, and that's themes that a lot of the other cast members have picked up on their interview.
Yes.
How do you think Richard grows over the series?
Well, it's interesting because we're all in a situation of survival. Mm-hmm. So the reason for growing up is to survive. Mm-hmm. So you have no option, really. So his journey of growing up is quite a fast one. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of power plays with a lot of characters. He has a lot of run-ins with characters, disagreements, wanting a lot of things his way. So he has to learn to either just keep himself quiet, which he doesn't do very often, or just go for it. Mm. And there are a few occasions, I suppose, where he just goes, sod you, I'll go for that.
Yeah, that's very true.
And I think that sod you moment is him having to prove to himself as well. Because he talks the talk, but he doesn't always walk the walk.
So he wants to prove that he can walk the walk himself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. It's very, very true of the character. I want to know, what was your reaction when you first read the script and thought, oh God, what has Zach got me doing?
Well, I first read the script and immediately knew that Richard was an asshole, which was great. It's obviously so far away from who I am as a person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I thought this would be exciting to play. But yeah, on first read, it was a very exciting... I didn't fully understand every journey in mm-hmm. it. I think that's something that's come with everyone in the space and mm-hmm. when we've spoken about it a lot
yeah.
more. But yeah, on first read, Richard was a very, very interesting character who stood out to me, actually.
Oh, well, that's
he was a very, as I say, I've said already, he's a very outspoken character, and in a way, very selfish.
Yeah.
And that really popped for me. And it's not a character I've really played before, and to do that on an audio play was interesting.
It's funny because when the group finally got together in how these do you think you understood the characters more that you weren't playing when you finally saw other people in the roles?
Of course, because when you read a script, you read the characters, your perception of them. So as soon as you're in a room with people who have read it slightly different to you, have a different perception mm-hmm. of a character, you start to see those characters in a different light.
Did someone else's reading of a character influence how you then took Richard?
Especially Jeffrey.
Yeah.
what a wonderful character Jeffrey is. Yes, he was annoying to start with,
yeah.
but as soon as all the actors were in the room and
James
started playing him, he became even more annoying. So it wasn't very hard for me to react in the way Richard would react normally.
Yeah.
Which was a good experience.
Can you describe what it's like when the whole team gets together in a room?
Yes. Have you ever walked in to a four-year-old's birthday party?
And everyone... I'm getting so many great metaphors for this situation.
Everyone is screaming and there's absolute chaos, no order, and nobody knows what they're doing to start with. It's like we haven't seen each other for months and everybody has to have their jolly and have a talk first without the cup of tea, because none of us need caffeine, to be fair. But yeah, it's absolute chaos, but in a good way. I mean, yeah, that soon does simmer down and we get down to business.
It does. But... and the creativity comes out of the chaos sometimes.
Yes, and sometimes we find things within that chaos that we can bring into the audio play, which is great.
Very true, very true.
But it's also nice to create an atmosphere, because when you're doing an audio play, obviously you're not live on stage, you haven't got an audience. It's all about your voice, so you have to have something to react to.
What was that transition like from theatre and film to audio?
Hard.
Yeah,
very hard for me, and it's something I spoke to you about before we started the journey, and it was my apprehension, really. Didn't know how I'd deal with it, but it was hard, but something that I learned to deal with on the way. It's never easy to record, film, perform out of sync like you do in films and stuff. That can sometimes be difficult. But it's all about trying to just remember where you're coming from, where you're going to, I suppose.
Well, there we go. Thank you. What do you think is Richard's most important relationship in the group?
I hate to say it, but it's probably Nora.
Yeah.
It has to be Nora.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Of course it is. Because he learns a lot from Nora about leadership and about how to conduct himself with people and how to make friends. Nora's that person that he wants to be. So he watches her. He learns from her, reluctantly sometimes. Definitely. Although Jeffrey, as soon as Jeffrey comes in, there's a lot of relationship building going on there.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of the day, Jeffrey isn't what Richard perceives to be as a human. So he doesn't value his opinion as much. He uses Jeffrey, whereby Nora doesn't allow herself to be used.
That's very true.
Which Richard, I suppose, has a underlying respect for. But that's where the difficulty comes with them. So yeah, Nora is that character for Richard.
What is it like when, because I know there are a couple of times, what's it like when these two characters get together, Nora and Richard?
Well, it's literally like having the two big heads chucked in a wrestling ring together. I mean, and Nora usually wins, which is very annoying. Because if you haven't got this already, Richard becomes very annoyed very easily.
Yes.
It's difficult. And I suppose it's also that element that she's a woman and I'm a man. So she does think about things a lot, naturally think about the progression of things and how things can affect the rest of the people, where Richard thinks of a plan. Doesn't think of the consequences. So she has the upper hand of seeing the bigger picture. Where Richard doesn't.
Of course. That's very, very true. When recording the show, what was the most fun and what was the most challenging aspects of these things?
Crikey. The most fun. Let's see.
Oh, so few things to think of.
I suppose they go hand in hand, the most fun and the most challenging, really, because the challenge is the new thing, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then that becomes the most fun because it's new. And for me, that's probably all the sound effects that we do. I'm sure other people have said it, but like climbing trees, and not necessarily my character having to create noises, but helping other characters to create those noises. The two moments for me, the climbing the tree was an interesting one. And also...
Which sounds great. It does.
Are you sure?
Yes. You'll hear it, I swear.
I'm yet to hear it. And also getting bitten. We're in a small room. And to have to react to nothing touching you, nothing grabbing you, no physical of that happening. It's very difficult to react to.
Yeah.
But also very fun because you just sometimes go for it and what comes out isn't quite right. But
you roll the dice.
Yeah, of course you do. And that's part of the learning with it. And I think we've all learned on the process to find ways to create those atmospheric moments.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. Well, thank you for sitting down with me.
No problem.
I very much appreciate you powering through this interview with me.
Thank you.
Yes, goodbye everyone.
Goodbye.
This interview contains spoilers for episode 1 through 7 of The Orphans, so please listen to that before listening to this interview. Hello, everyone! Welcome to some behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah.
Interview for The Orphans.
Sure.
I'm here. My name is Zachary Fortescom. I'm the writer-director of The Orphans, and I'm joined by my friend and partner in crime,
sure,
James Barbarossa.
I've not committed any crimes.
We want to admit that.
On record, I have not committed any crimes.
James,
hi.
You play...
Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Joffrey.
So many people are going to call him Joffrey.
His name is not pronounced.
Joffrey. Yeah. Even our own cast have called him Joffrey.
Hello!
Are you geometrically fabricated?
I am geometrically fabricated and functional reasoning unit.
Oh, but you can call
I
me.
Came up with that acronym.
You did, yeah. I assigned you that task.
There were no good Y words.
No,
so,
you so to
I
do
just
unit.
Said unit, and I was Fuck like, it. That starts with a y.
Yeah, no, it was, I came up with the name Jeffrey when I was writing. And then I was like,
but "You spell it with and a I knew, J."
I spelt it with a J, and then
I saw immediate potential in turning it into G-O-E-O.
Yeah,
having it geometrically.
And I was like, "Yeah,
we can do geo something in here."
Yeah.
Okay, let's get this interview on the road.
Well, obviously, this is already started. That was some brilliant insight into the inception of the character.
This is going to be a weird interview.
Is it
because? You and I do a podcast.
Yeah.
So we are actually, it's going to be difficult to not slip into podcast.
Yeah, that's what I'm
thinking. We just talk about garbage.
Okay, but James, I want to ask you.
Ask me questions.
How did you first become involved in The Orphans? What was the...
You are my friend.
Yes.
So...
No, but I mean, when did I first bring it to you? What was the first we talked about?
Well, you said you wanted to do an audio drama, and you wanted to do a science fiction audio drama, because you hate university, and all your university work is miserable, and all of my university work is miserable, and so you came to me and said... James, I want to do an audio drama, and I want you to be a sassy artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I was going to ask
and
you
I
how
like,
I pitched that to you. That's
and I was like, of course I'll be a sassy artificial
of course,
intelligence.
Naturally.
I almost am in real life.
You had a good process, probably more than anyone else, in kind of carving out the character.
Well, I am the best.
Well, it's just that you had more notice. With some people, they were given 2 days' notice. Like, oh yeah, we're doing this thing.
I mean, if I had 2 days, notice, I probably would have done the same amount of preparation as I did.
No, but you kind of did. We came in several times, and can you describe the process of how we found Jeffrey's voice?
Well, I myself like to. Call myself a science fiction writer.
Yeah, so you do. One would say a better science fiction than
I really
than
do
me.
Like to call myself a science fiction writer. Because I've got a big ego. But I like artificial intelligence characters.
Yeah.
I find them to be very enjoyable as characters and to analyze them. Just at because it really is, what would it be like to be a living thing, but have a mind that is generated by a computer? and to have a mind that could, that doesn't necessarily, that's, your body doesn't degrade over time. So if given if given regular maintenance, you could live forever.
Yeah.
You've got no fear of death as well. You could, just what it would be like to have a mind that is in multiple bodies at once. And if you die, if your body dies, you just are connected to the internet. So
yeah.
You just are in another, you just can go to another body. And there are other versions of you in another body. But I particularly found the prospect of what it would it be like to be a character who is immortal and who is connected to other bodies, slowly just gaining data and then realizing, oh, if my body falls apart, this version of myself, which is its own thing, will die.
Yeah, that was very much kind of the part, the whole arc of Jeffrey was his...
taking an like slicing an identity out of an infinite consciousness.
You know? Yeah.
So,
how was that process for you? Because I know that we had conversations about how you changed the performance over time.
I looked at a lot of other robotic characters, and there are a lot that I find and really enjoyable, and so I wanted to draw from different aspects of them. I looked into GLaDOS.
Oh yeah,
from the Portal series, because she's kind of a sadist.
Oh yeah.
And she's a horrible person, but she exists in this huge body for so long that she's got this kind of very, very sane madness. Which I wanted to capture for one of the later episodes, which I will not spoil. Presumably.
Well, I think we'll not spoil the end. Yeah, let's not spoil the end.
There was an aspect of that, like this sort of what having a function. Would do to you, what having a function that your body forces your mind to fit would do to you.
It's funny because we do have a couple characters.
Yeah, I do play. I do play
a couple.
I play a number of Jeffreys. I play the first Jeffrey.
Yeah,
in the ship.
Yeah, who we've distinguished as different.
Let's assume you've watched episode one.
Yeah,
Jeffrey in the ship. I play Jeffrey in the body. I play the particular Jeffrey that we're talking talking about, and I play another character,
Jeffrey, yeah.
Another Jeffrey at some other point. Are we spoiling it?
I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
I guess. Well. Okay. Maybe I'll record something for the beginning. I'll say, this interview contains spoilers for episode 1-7 of The Orphans.
Yes.
So please listen to that before listening to this interview.
So Facility Jeffrey.
Yeah.
I wanted to go down the GLaDOS route of being a giant mind in a building, of what it would be like to be in a building with a function, and for that to be your body.
Well, it's funny because that very much is kind of the epitome of what the show is because, you know, as we find out the midway through episode 7, you know, they're all clones, they all have a function. We meet several robot characters who are programmed to have one function, and all these characters kind of discover differences within themselves that they identify outside of that programming, so to say. And that is very much reflected in Jeffrey.
Facility Jeffrey is the consequence of his programming.
Yeah.
Whereas Jeffrey, our good friend, main Jeffrey.
Jeffrey Prime?
No, Jeffrey, I thought Jeffrey Prime was...
We don't know how we're referring
to him. Just regular Jeffrey.
Yeah.
He's a mixture of Jarvis.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of a sarcastic butler type. Because, this version of Jeffrey, I decided, started off. He's designed for comfortable living conditions, so he's designed to interact with people when they're most comfortable.
Yeah.
And he's thrown into this world of like these survivors where they're not trusting and they don't mm-hmm. they don't trust him. They're doing stuff to survive. They're being, you know, they're killing. But at the same time, I wanted to capture this this disconnect with death and with what it would be like to have a gross human body. And so I took a lot of inspiration in some of his more sadistic moments. I wanted to go down the Jeeves route, where
Jeeves, I don't know.
Jeeves from Jeeves and Worcester.
I've not seen it.
He's butlerial. he's a butler, but he's very sarcastic, and he thinks that his boss is an idiot.
Mm.
And I also wanted to go down the route of he's Jarvis, but he's also a character called HK-47, who was a droid from Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, who is an assassin droid and takes great pleasure in describing in detail the brutal. So I sort of had a mixture between. Yes, hello, I'm Jeffrey. And the more sort of butler style, and then taking pleasure and freaking out the humans with sort of.
Yeah, you Jeffrey definitely does nine. Take a lot of pleasure.
Skulls crack. Brains everywhere. Just a sort of. And then he can play that off as, oh, I'm a mere robot. I have no understanding of this. But in actuality, it's a little bit of getting his own back against.
Yeah, of course.
Because he's initially very friendly.
Yeah, he starts out that way.
But he's confronted with
immediate
distrust and hostility. And frankly, stupidity. None of them have their memories.
Yeah, no, they're all a bit all over the place. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so he very quickly is like, well, I'm clearly not going to be friends with these people.
Speaking about that, I wanted to ask you, what do you think was Jeffrey's most important relationship in the show?
I would say his most important relationship is obviously Baz. Because Baz is really his point of contact with humanity. Baz is the conduit. Because Baz is obviously a technician.
Mm-hmm.
Baz can sort of understand a robot.
Mm-hmm. And he's the halfway point.
He's willing to understand what it's like to be a machine. But also, he can sort of learn. Because as he's gradually learning to become a human through a fear of death, and he learns from Baz sort of a way to be, a way to be alive, a way to be a human.
Yeah.
But I think what's actually more important than that is his relationship with Richard.
Yeah.
Because he and Richard are enemies.
Very much
Richard's
so.
Basically an enemy with everybody there.
Yeah, that's very true. He's very much his own man.
He and Richard do not get on.
No. Yeah.
And so I think he learns a brutality.
Really?
From Richard. Yeah. In a way. But maybe he more learns a brutality from Facility Jeffrey.
Oh, yeah. If we're talking episode 7.
But that the brutality of Facility Jeffrey is also very present in Richard.
Mm. Which is, I think, why Facility Jeffrey found it so easy to seduce Richard, yeah.
So I think Jeffrey probably, by clashing with Richard, by clashing with everything that Richard wants to do, and he wants to be brash and he wants to be cruel and brutal about things, by clashing with that, he sort of becomes like Richard, but on the opposite side of morality, where he's like, this is a bad thing, and then I'm going to put a stop to it, and I don't care. But I do think he learns. I like to think he'd learn more from Baz's kindness than he would from Richard's cruelty.
That's kind of the hope.
But there we are. Yeah. I guess we'll have to. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you something about when the group gets together to record.
Yes.
Can you describe what it's like when all 8 of us are in a room together? Sometimes 9 if we've got Jody in.
I feel like we get on.
Yeah.
We get on very well.
Yeah. Would you say you're a fam? Would you say your dynamics in the show are represented in your real life relationships?
I would say that the type of group that we are together is very much like the group of characters. But I wouldn't say there's a one-to-one matchup between the people. I am probably the most well, I think maybe Amy, who is Nora, is the most like her character.
Yeah. I'd agree actually.
In that she doesn't want to mess around.
I'm ready, Zach. She'll always say
so we'll all be messing about and she'll say, "I'm ready, Zach."
She very much leads the group, which is
whereas
nice
I would say control. I'm maybe second. I may be the second most like my character. In that I want to disrupt things. I get a great pleasure from disrupting the situation. So I like to find weak points I like to disrupt people.
Yeah.
It's not helpful, but I feel like it. It's fun for me. So.
Oh yeah. And how would you describe the atmosphere in a typical group recording session?
I feel like you and Amy want to get stuff done and the rest of us don't. Like, we want to get it done, but
you guys are having a good time.
We want to mess around.
Yeah.
So I would say it's one of and we get great enjoyment out of you two being very stressed and not being able to get stuff done.
Would you call it organized chaos?
I would say it is organized chaos.
Because that's what I would say.
Short of Gavin, who is Richard, maybe.
Yes.
I think Alex
and
I. And
who's Baz?
And
Alex
who's Baz,
is Baz. Declan's William.
Mm-hmm. Alex and Declan and I. And maybe to a lesser extent,
Ruby.
Who's
Valerie?
And Laura.
Oh, you Olivia. And Laura. Just to fill the audience in, Laura Girling, who plays
Laura
Olivia, is
we,
also my girlfriend.
We've got a special thing going on. Where,
James.
Which is you in particular.
Yeah.
That we like to mess with and torture quite a lot.
My girlfriend and my best friend, when they get together, just love to torture me.
It's because we care about you, Zip. And we want to see you in anguish.
Yeah.
But as a group, we like I like disrupting your life.
Yeah.
But also I like just being disruptive in general. So
yes.
That's a good thing to have on record, right?
Yeah, I guess.
I recognize when it needs to get done. I feel like when we need to get done, when there's a time sensitive situation, the group we know to stop messing around.
Yes, that's very true.
It's a very fun atmosphere. It's a very fun against the grain kind of atmosphere where we all want to mess around.
That's very true.
Make fun of everything that's going on.
I'm just going to wrap this up, but before we do, I just want to ask you one last thing, which is, of all the scenes that we recorded, which was the most challenging to record and which was the most fun to record?
Okay. I think the most fun for me personally was when I was playing Facility Jeffrey in the last episode. Because that is these two characters that I've that I've created in my brain.
Mm.
That, I mean, you wrote them.
Yeah, but you're such a huge part of bringing them to life.
I'm calling upon two aspects of myself at this point. There's sort of one who's quite a cold, almost sort of the Doctor from Doctor Who, like character, and one who's quite a manic, almost the Joker.
Oh yeah, you definitely.
I definitely channel the Joker in Felicity Jeffrey as well, just vocally.
Which Joker?
Mark Hamill's Joker.
Yeah, yeah.
Got to be Mark Hamill's Joker. So I thought that was the most fun because that was just me fighting myself. And there's nothing I like more than talking to myself. So
yeah,
I had a lot of fun with that because that was a lot of that was two very high energy versions of these two characters.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. The hardest, I would say, was couldn't say what the hardest was.
Maybe.
No, I don't know. I don't think there was a. I would say it was all pretty. It was all pretty good.
Smooth. Yeah.
I would say smooth.
Well,
but not difficult. Maybe some of the more emotional stuff.
Yeah.
Where Jeffrey is learning to be human was quite difficult because I had to be both stoic and emotional.
Yeah.
Because I'm a robot with feelings at this point. So I would say that was maybe the most difficult. But not in a hard way. It was difficult but fun and enjoyable.
There we go.
It's been worth it's been a good interview.
It has been a good interview. Thank you for sitting down with me. Now you're gonna interview me and we'll get it all done.
I wrote Alex and I wrote a I wrote a really intense rap.
I don't want to say it. Then why would you bring it up?
You know, just in case. Yeah, you've got it recorded somewhere.
I'm
right?
sure I do. I could find that somewhere.
So, just in case the audience wants to hear.
Gosh. All right,
and Alex and I doing a rap about aardvarks.
Aardvarks, yeah. Put his mammal head right out of the carport.
A very inappropriate aardvark rap.
Yeah, no.
But I think it was a way of building energy.
Yeah.
A rapport. That I think has paid off in the end.
It has, the rapport between everyone. Anyways, I'll wrap this interview up. It was lovely speaking with you, and you guys can tune in. Maybe this is the first interview that's posted. Maybe this is the last, but who knows? Maybe there are also interviews with every other cast member and myself, so you can check those out.
Good interviews, eh?
Woo!
I have had a good time recording with you, which we obviously never do.
No, never
have. I'll see you in a couple of days when we record. A podcast episode. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.